Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. Chomping down a Jersey Mike sub. Live in LA, it's the Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. I could talk about what I want to talk about now for an hour. Joy Taylor joining me. Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs, be a sub above. So the NFL came out yesterday. And you have to remember, only 22% of America is on Twitter. It's not real life. It leans way left. Now there's a lot of, you know, trolls on the right. But it tends to be younger. Younger people tend to lean left in their politics. So it can be, you know, everybody's offended by everything. But in real life, you know, when's the last time in a social setting you were deeply offended? You go to Twitter, everybody's offended with everything. So it's not real life. And only 22% of America is on Twitter. 6% really uses it. So it's the same people over and over acting offended or being vile and being jerks or being overly sensitive. That's kind of what the platform is. But so when the rule came out, I want to talk about this for 10 minutes. I get so worked up, Joy. You want to go back and forth on this. Ryan, you can chip in too. So yesterday, a couple days ago, the NFL came out and said, we're going to be tough on taunting. Now, let's just be honest. The NFL knows their business better than you do. I know, guy on Reddit board. Crumbs on your shirt, guy. You swear you're better than Roger Goodell. You're not. Nobody takes you seriously. The league knows what they're doing. They move teams around. The St. Louis Rams, the L.A. Rams, great move. Oakland Raiders, Vegas Raiders, they move a franchise. They were right. San Diego to L.A., everybody got upset. They're blowing past the Chargers-San Diego season ticket numbers. The league is much smarter, better run than every other professional league. They pay their players, but they don't get, you know, how many teams in the NFL are hostage to a bad contract? Almost none. There are baseball teams in bad deals, NBA teams. Not in the NFL. So the NFL has research. You understand when Joy and I talk about stuff, we have research. We know what moves the needle. We know what doesn't on our topics. This is what we do for a living. Just like I don't tell my accountant how to do my taxes, it's what he does for a living. So the NFL knows what works and what doesn't. And everybody on Twitter was like, oh, you don't get it. It's taunting, celebration. There's a big difference between celebrating and taunting. Celebrating is we scored a touchdown and all the guys are doing those funny celebrations, and those are great. Those are awesome. Taunting is I turn to the guy I just beat, I get in his grill, and I poke in his face and I spike the ball. And there's just enough young men in the NFL that emotionally come unhinged when you do that, that there's no upside to it. Nobody goes to an NFL game for this reason. You want to go to the game? Yeah, I like to go see taunting. What about Mahomes? Not really interested. Joey Bosa, couldn't care less. I just want to go to the Chiefs game to watch taunting. Nobody says that. Nobody buys merchandise from the best taunters in the NFL. Go look at the top 20 jersey sellers. There's no taunters there. There's no upside to taunting. There is a downside. Never forget, the malice in the palace, the darkest day for the NBA in terms of PR, was started because a paper cup was thrown on a player. And that player, Ron Artest, freaked out. And I defended him. If I was in a big arena and a fan threw something at me, I'd come unhinged. These leagues do not want fights. They want kids and families. They want Coca-Cola and Pepsi, Ford and Chevy, Mercedes-Benz. Those advertisers don't want to be part of toxic. I mean, the NBA lost dozens of advertisers for years after the malice in the palace. They lost fans. So I'm not saying that's going to happen in the NFL. But when you see these skirmishes and fights, the NFL's got a lot to lose. This is not the MLS. They got a lot of fans and advertisers. So the Twitter runs to the defense. Oh, don't confuse celebrating and taunting. It's like I can disagree with somebody on Twitter. That's not trolling. I can go back and forth with you. We can have an adult conversation. But there are people that just troll to troll. And you go to their profile and their last 35 tweets are just going after celebrities. That no positive, all negative. And then you go to people that sometimes you just disagree. And it's a very adult, rarely on Twitter, back and forth. There's a difference between disagreeing and trolling. There is a difference between celebrating, which I love. I think the end zone stuff's a riot when the teams do like photos. I think it's funny. That's not taunting. Taunting is turning and spiking the ball in a player's face. And there's no upside to it. Like, I've done well in my life. Joey and I have done well in my life. And for some reason, maybe it's because I talk business, a lot of people come up to me. I get a lot of emails and a lot of, I got a business idea for you. Colin, I got something I want you to promote. I get it all. I get it 100 times a year. Last night, I got another one. And I always say, will it change my life if it hits? Because it's going to take more time away from my family. That's the downside. I don't need another business. This is enough. What's the upside? Like I make a good living. I put money away. Can I buy a private jet? All right, I'll listen. That'd be awesome, right? Don't have to go to an airport anymore. Because I know the downside is less time with my wife and my kids. So my takeaway, even on just like a simple business, what's the upside downside? With taunting, there is no upside. None. There's a potential for a mess. Face mask, bang, a coach gets hit. It's just bad optics. Nobody's going to these games for taunting. Nobody's buying jerseys for taunting. So when Twitter, when you go to Twitter, it's not real life. Everybody is ripping the NFL for this. Oh, you guys are fuddy-duddies. The NFL's better run than the company you work for. They know what they're doing. Now, they make mistakes. I've said for years, Roger Goodell should not be handing out punishment. They should have a committee for that. Commissioners have got to get out of this. You know, player does something horrible, a domestic violence situation, and the commissioners of any sport are making the decision. Can you get a damn committee with some women on it? Some, you know, a diverse committee that makes rulings on that stuff. You know, there's a reason, like, the president has a cabinet, right? We don't need Joe Biden or Trump or there's stuff they should hand to other people and experts and not have to make a decision on. But by and large, the NFL has their act together. Players have power, but not too much power like the NBA, where Ben Simmons, who's been coddled, can be difficult. Like, that's not right. It's not right that Ben Simmons can hold a franchise hostage, not show up to camp, not return. That's not right. That's not why sports is great in America. Sports is great in America because Josh Allen comes from a small town, works his butt off, struggles, and then takes this great city that loves its team, Buffalo, and takes them for the next 10 years to Super Bowl ramifications. That's what's great about sport. Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City loves its football. And Patrick Mahomes, they move up, they roll the dice, they get Patrick Mahomes. He's a great kid with a great family. He plays hurt. You can't take him off the field when he gets a concussion. He's begging to get back in. That's what makes sports great. Dak Prescott rips up his leg. Both teams surround him. Players are crying. Players are crying on the other team. That's what's great about sports. Stop defending crap. Taunting sucks. There's no upside to it. You don't go to games for that. Why we love sports in America is about team, and we want our athletes to care as much about sports as we do. We throw shoes at a TV. We bet on it. We take our cable bill. We bet on it. We love our teams. We paint our faces. We wear jerseys. We go. It takes 6 hours to get home because the freeway's packed. Not taunting. Stop defending taunting. There's no upside to it. I'm not going to get into my Bitcoin thing, but I understood the Bitcoin people. I understood the Bitcoin people. I did. I'm not a big Bitcoin player, but I understood the Bitcoin people. because it was a roller coaster, right? And if you got the roller coaster on the right thing, somebody making $50,000 a year all of a sudden makes $32,000 on Bitcoin. I'm like, I get it. I mean, Bitcoin is Looney Tunes to me. I don't even, there's no bank. I don't know what you can buy with it. I don't even understand Bitcoin. But I got it. I saw the upside. I have a friend who did pretty well with Bitcoin. The upside, the taunting is what? Donut, bagel, nada, zip, nothing. I defend the NFL on that. And if they go a little intense on it, and you know, Joy, you know what they're going to do. They're going to call a lot of it in the preseason. Right? Like anytime a guy looks and whistle, everybody's going to overreact and go, oh, this is ridiculous. No, what they're going to do is send a message in the preseason and in September. So the NFL is going to call this taunting and it's going to sound, there's going to be a penalty and you're going to be like, but they're going to be sending a message. Just don't mess with this. Go celebrate with your teammates. What the taunting penalty is really telling you, what it's really telling you, is, hey, you athletes, we want to love you so much. Go celebrate with your teammates. That's what it's really doing.
Well, I think the reaction, which, look, I am the kind of person that has to have an opinion about everything. If I don't have an opinion, I'm just not weighing in. Then I saw this news and I was like, makes sense. Move on with my day. I'm not going to be outraged or pretend to be outraged just because a change was made that I may or may not agree with. Now, in this situation, to your point, they're trying to keep situations under control. The first thing that pops to mind is the Myles Garrett situation with the Steelers in Cleveland.
I didn't even think about that. That's a great example. That was so bad.
A disaster.
You had racial accusations.
It was a disaster.
It was a disaster. And by the way, that thing, Joy, inflamed in 1 second.
Instantly. And it actually ended much more controlled and better than it could have. It really could have been very, very violent.
We were getting helmets used as weapons.
It was a nightmare. So, to your point, there's only upside to eliminating taunting. I think the reaction, and I'm not speaking for anyone on Twitter, obviously, but I imagine that some of the reaction is, okay, they're going to eliminate celebrations because you remember they were being ridiculous about the celebration penalties. And they listened and changed it, and now it's great.
It's great. But that's not taunting.
That's not taunting. No. So I think the fear is that the referees are going to be calling things like that as taunting. And that's where I think the NFL needs to watch the line and make sure that the referees don't take the fun that has come into the game from them allowing celebrations by trying to eliminate taunting. And to your point, I think they probably will overcall it in the preseason. Referees have meetings with the league as well. And then the league can say, okay, look, this is okay. We're going to allow this, but we're not going to allow this. And we'll, use your discretion to understand what the difference is. Again, nothing is the end of the world. We're still going to watch football every day on Sunday. It's still going to be fun and awesome. And overall, they're still going to allow the celebrations to happen.
Yeah, I mean, how many of you watch the NFL and say to yourself, it's not entertaining enough. I need a Myles Garrett backup Steeler quarterback situation. Like, I watch Sunday. I'm always amazed every Sunday in the NFL. How much I love the game.
Yeah.
Every game's got just great athletes and crazy plays. Never once rushed there. God, do I need taunting today to make it?
This did not move the needle for me 1%. I literally looked at the news and was like, it'll be fine.
So I just went 15 minutes on that topic. I'll argue that thing. Most stuff I don't really argue.
Well, I think it's a lot of the whole tough guy thing and everything's very soft and everyone's a snowflake. It's so sensitive. Or maybe you're the sensitive one and it's really actually
I think your
be
point
okay.
was great. I didn't even think about this. The reason that rule came up is what you mentioned. That Myles Garrett situation is the exact... What does the NFL do every year? Something in the offseason, they're like, okay, this became a really bad narrative for the league. Remember the catch thing? When guys like me and Joy and Max Kellerman and Skip and all of us in the opinion space, we're just ripping the league every Monday. We're like, remember I brought Goodell on the show and I'm like, this league, I don't even understand what a catch is. And he admitted, yeah, it's difficult. We're not quite. So they, in the offseason, they're like, we got to change it. It's bad optics.
Yeah, they fixed it just like they did with the celebrations.
That Myles Garrett thing, it was 15 seconds. We talked about it for 9 months. We didn't talk about a touchdown, a beautiful play the Browns made for 9 months. We talked about that taunting for 9 months. That's why the league, it's a great point. That moment is why the league said, we got to get out of this space. We do. I mean,
no, it was really bad.
Oh, no, no. It was violent. When you got guys grabbing bats or helmets, that is something other leagues could use against the NFL. You can't let your kids play this violent game. Listen, don't kid yourself. The NFL, these other leagues are tired of the NFL. They're looking for openings to say, you shouldn't play that sport. That sports do this. That sports do this. So anyway, I love that rant. You know what? I'm hungry. I'm going to eat the rest of my sandwich. I got so worked up on that.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
David Ortiz is putting his money on the line on the Fox Bet Super 6 app. Scan the QR code below, download the app, and enter the Field of Dreams contest for a chance to win $10,000 of Big Poppy's money.
Yankees, White Sox. Now, that's the game in Iowa.
Yes.
Okay, so this is going to be in Dyersville, Iowa. It's a beautiful part of the country. Cornfields. I don't think Joe Jackson's going to come from the cornfields out of the field, like the movie Field of Dreams. It is the second best sports movie, in my opinion, ever. By the way, football movies stink because they're not realistic.
Ask Stink if he's seen Remember the Titans. I bet you he has.
Okay, so I remember, what's the one with Al Pacino?
Any Given Sunday.
Yeah, I love Al Pacino. It wasn't realistic to me. And then I love Kevin.
Inches.
Huh?
With your fingers. Come on. That's a great speech.
And it had people I like. I think John McGinley was in that movie. He's wonderful. Pacino's great. I didn't buy it. And then, there's a good football movie. Longest Yard. Oh, that's hysterical. The late Burt Reynolds.
My bad.
Now, North Dallas 40 got a lot.
Okay, so The Longest Yard is a good movie, but you're not into suspending reality.
Well, it was a little bit of a prison movie. It had a dark side to it, and I like dark movies.
That's funny.
All right, I got to read this. Wolf and Shepherd dress shoe made and worn by athletes like Gronk and Steve Nash. Go to wolfandshepherd.com, and the code is HERD10. It's a shoe I'm wearing today. All right, Mark Schlereth, 3 Super Bowl rings, 2-time Pro Bowler. I'm going to ask him, best football movie ever made. Let's go to Schlereth.
All right.
Give me the best football movie ever made.
The Water Boy. I mean, No, seriously, that's the best football. By far. By the way, Al Pacino, when I was playing with the Broncos, Al Pacino followed Mike Shanahan around, and he used to come to our meetings. He'd be in the back. He'd be hidden up in a back viewing room. And he'd come to our meetings like before the game Saturday night to watch how Mike Shanahan operated a football team. So he shadowed Shanahan to prepare to make Any Given Sunday.
Now,
was like in 1998, 1997, whatever.
Have you ever seen Remember the Titans?
Oh, yeah, that's a great movie. That's a great movie. Love that movie.
God, okay, I missed out.
Told you. No, you can still watch it. It's still available.
Yeah, you can download it or whatever.
Really?
Whatever it is you kids do nowadays, you know, download it, watch it on your iPad.
All right, so I want to go to this Jordan Love thing. And I said, I got Mac Jones playing Thursday, all the rookies playing Saturday, but Jordan Love. And I said, now, Mark, just tell me here's my take, and you tell me if I'm wrong, is that with most of these rookie quarterbacks, except Jordan Love, they're going to have to play pretty quick. And so if I was a coach, I'd put him in situations they weren't comfortable in. I'd put him in situations where they may fail. Jordan Love's not going to play. And I've taken such bad PR on the Jordan Love pick. My feeling is they're going to set him up to succeed and actually have a preseason game plan a little bit for Jordan Love. Having played in the league for as many years as you did, is that realistic or unrealistic?
Well, I think in the first game, you're just going to go out and try to operate your offense. There's not a whole lot of game planning that will go on. In the second game, you'll probably get some game planning for Jordan Love, see what he can and can't do. But I think the biggest thing, you know, you talk about put him in a position to succeed or fail. The biggest thing is, can you take what you've learned in the classroom? Can you take what you've learned on the grease board? Can you take what you've learned in film study? Can you take what you've learned in walkthroughs? Can you take what you've learned in practice and actually apply it in a game? Because they're completely different. They never look the same. And then you think about a young quarterback, what you have, what you have to do. And this goes from taking the play in from the coaching staff, then being able to verbalize the play in the huddle with command, then walking up the line of scrimmage and being able to understand what the protection is, who we have, who's the potential hot, do I need to change the protection? Now I have to preview the defense. Well, what kind of shell are they in? What does this defense look like? pre-snap, right? Now, as I snap the ball 2.5 seconds, I have to be able to decipher what they are in post-snap. And I have to look at the front side of the progression and go, is this good? And understand where everybody on defense is supposed to be theoretically and where my best opening or my best receiver is. All that in 2.5 seconds. I don't know how anybody has success doing it. It's exceptionally difficult. So you're going to put him in there and just see how he orchestrates this offense. How does he play with what we give him? And what we give him is our vanilla first day installation stuff. It's, you know, it's, you know, curl flat. It's two jet stick spacing. It's, you know, it's first day installation stuff. That's what we're going to run.
You know, you played in the NFL. How many total years did you play?
12.
And how many starting quarterbacks did you play with in your career?
I played with, quite a few, I suppose. In Washington, I played with Rip. I played with Doug Williams. I played with Heath Shuler, John Freeze, Rich Gannon. You know, in Denver, I played with Bubby Brister, John Elway, and Brian Greasy. So not as many. There may have been and Gus Frerotte. Okay. So not as many there.
Okay, so here's my question. We have all these young quarterbacks. We got Trey Lance and Justin Fields and Mac Jones and Jordan Love. Forget the media's interpretation. How long did it take you on that offensive line? How many practices, how many huddles before you knew star franchise guy not going to work?
Oh, shoot. With some guys, you know, in an instant. I mean, the very first practice I ever played the very first practice when we took Heath Shuler and Gus Frerotte in the same draft. Heath Shuler was the first rounder, like fourth or fifth overall. Gus Frerotte was a seventh rounder. And we went through our whole team the very first day of minicamp. Our whole team, the starters went 20 plays or whatever they went. And then we stood on the sideline and the first year and rookie guys took their 20 plays and they split them between Gus and Heath. And I leaned over to a couple guys on the offensive line. I said, mark my words, the guy we draft in the seventh round is better than the guy we draft in the first round. You mark my words right now. Gus went on to play for 15 years in the league and Heath, you know, got traded a couple of years later to New Orleans and the rest of his history. And it really is, it has nothing to do, you know, people think it's all about intelligence. And it really isn't intelligence. You can get things in a classroom and you can write things on a board and you can see it on film. The game moves so fast and your ability to decipher information, to take that information in and to be able to make a decision like that, that's a God-given talent, just like you your vertical leap or your 40 time. And some guys, you've seen this forever, Colin. You've seen a lot of really intelligent guys who don't articulate well, they're really intelligent. They just don't speak well, right? And then you've seen guys like me that aren't, you know, that aren't bright, but you know, I can spit out a couple sentences, right? So, I mean, the bottom line is how quickly can you take in that information that your eyes see and instantly make a decision and have it be the right decision? And that's a God-given talent. That, you know, when that brain fires, those synapses hit and it reacts all the way down to your arms and your feet and you just react. Like, that to me is a God-given talent. You either have that, you're born with it, you're blessed with it, or you're not.
Finally, Joe Burrow has acknowledged that he's coming off a mangled leg, ACL, MCL, additional ligament damage, and it's hard. You know, you fall off a motorcycle and crash, you don't want to get back on that puppy for a while. You had a lot of injuries. Take me through the psychology of your career. You had a lot of knee surgeries. How long did it take you to get back on the bike and feel like you were 100% ready to go?
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, clip this and send it to Joe Burrow, because what I'm about to say may save his career. What you have to be able to do mentally is be okay with never being 100% again. Once you've been altered, you will never be the same. You will forever be altered. And what you have to do is say, I have to reestablish what my 100% is. It may be 80% of what I used to be, but I can still operate efficiently with 80%. If you wait till you feel like you used to feel before you ever had any operation or anything happen to you, guess what? You'll wait yourself out of the league. You have to be able to establish what your new 100% is, and you have to say mentally, this is it. This is as good as I ever feel. Now, if you feel better than that, kudos. Good for you. That's great. But you have to say, this is as good as I'll probably ever feel. And it's plenty good enough for me to go out and be productive. It's not good enough just to play hurt. You have to play injured. But it's not good enough to play hurt and injured. You have to play good hurt. You have to play hurt and injured. And you have to play well hurt and injured. And that's the requirement if you want to play in the NFL and have a long career.
Mark Schlereth, hope you've had a great summer. Good seeing you,
buddy. I have. A lot of landscaping. I am awesome.
Why did I know that?
Yeah.
Good seeing you, my man.
You too, buddy.
Escape QuickBooks. Quicksand with NetSuite by Oracle, the number one financial system. Switch now, one-of-a-kind financing. Head to netsuite.com/herd, H-E-R-D, right now. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Well, Patrick Mahomes has established himself as a superstar in the league. Probably right there with Tom Brady, arguably the best right now. I think some people would give him the edge, but he feels like he still has a lot to learn. He told Kevin Clark of The Ringer that he reaches out to veterans across the league to pick their brains about the game. He said, I don't think people realize all us guys talk. I talk to Aaron, I talk to Tom, and they're willing to give me advice. I'm still a young guy in this league. I'm still trying to learn how to continue to have success every single year. And so being able to talk like that with the guys is definitely a good thing.
How lucky is the NFL that this is the face of the league now? Brady, the old guy, all team, and Mahomes, young guy, all team. I mean, seriously, there's the face of the NFL.
Yeah.
You could not be luckier. Different backgrounds. One's dad was a pro athlete. One's dad sold insurance. Family kids, respectful, hardworking, likable. Mm-hmm. Like, incredibly likable. Folks, a lot of this stuff, never forget, when Michael Jordan retired, the league lost half its ratings. Not just because the players didn't all get bad, but Michael was a perfect face of the league. He was glamorous. His work ethos. He didn't offend either side. He was cool. He cared. He cried when he won.
He also fit the era, that relentless,
yes,
tough, kind of bully ball type of player. And now we're in more of a finesse, Steph Curry, glamorous LeBron type of era. And yeah, like what you are and when you are matters, the timeline of when you succeed. I just like this quote because we talk all the time about how to get better and change and being flexible and knowing that you don't know everything.
Whoa.
And here is the face of the NFL, one of the faces of the NFL, a guy who's won an MVP,
yeah,
a guy who's won a Super Bowl. And what does he do? Does he sit back, say, I know everything.
Everything.
I am an expert in all things in life. Come to me for all your advice.
Reddit board, I know everything. I'm a member. No, he doesn't do that.
No, he's actually picking the brain of his peers, of his opponents, on how to improve as a player. So I love that quote. And nobody who needs to hear that is listening to what I'm saying anyway, but I'm still going to say it. So Mitchell Trubisky's tenure in Chicago did not go as well as he and the Bears would have hoped. And now he is backing up Josh Allen in Buffalo. And he originally looked to compete for a starting job this year, but now he's with the Bills. He is happy to be somewhere that makes him feel wanted.
At first, I wanted to go to a spot where I would be able to compete for the starting position, but the right situation didn't come up, and that opportunity really wasn't there. So I looked at the next best thing where I could continue to develop and continue to progress and become a better player and a person, and fell into this organization, and I loved it ever since coming to Buffalo. It's just really nice to be a part of a great team and be somewhere where people want you here.
Oh.
By the way, he is now one of the top three or two backups in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I never felt he was a franchise quarterback, but he got his money and I'm happy for him. And he probably hates me because I'm critical of him. But in the end, the backup quarterback is an extremely important position in this league.
Yeah, I bet Dallas wishes they had.
Okay, the two best backups in this league are probably Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky. And that will serve purpose for a quarterback in Josh Allen that moves a lot. And that offensive line is not great yet. So there's a place in this league for Mitch Trubisky. Putting him in Chicago with average offensive players and asking him to carry, that's not what he is. That's unfair. So I'm glad he made his money, but he's not a savior player. but he is a functional player.
Well, also, if he does well at the backup position in Buffalo and he eventually becomes too expensive, he can then move on to another team
who is
maybe in a desperate situation for a starting quarterback, which always happens.
He will absolutely get one more shot somewhere.
Also, I think now, because the season has expanded, the backup quarterback position is going to become way more valuable than it already has been in the past few years. I mean, we've seen teams like the Saints. Do you think they were grateful to have Teddy Bridgewater there to back up Drew Brees
right.
and step right into the situation? We've seen time and time again, having a competent backup, Nick Foles, having a competent backup quarterback can save your season and potentially even win you a Super Bowl. So the backup quarterback position is not the worst place to be, especially if you are buying into the situation. Also, I have to say, I love this Buffalo situation. I just love that Buffalo is relevant again.
Yeah.
And I love it for the fans. And I think it's really good for the league because they're just such a good brand.
Well, the other thing is, there's always this, you know, I was talking to a friend the other day, all the polarization in America. People are overlooking small towns, really, because Milwaukee just won the NBA championship in the Glamour League. The Tampa Rays were in the World Series last year, and their budget is a nickel. and the NFL now is led by Green Bay, Buffalo, Kansas City, and both the New York operations are a disaster. Like, can we stop it? If you work hard in this country, and you're well run, you're going to be fine. Look at all these pro sports with all these rich cities. Look who's winning in pro sports. It's not, you know, I mean, it's like Philadelphia, Boston, Washington, Atlanta. No, Milwaukee. In the Glamour League in America, Milwaukee beat all the New Yorks and LAs and Phillies and Boston and Dallas's and Chicago's.
Yeah, people can stop being so dramatic, I think.
Yeah.
All right, so Dan Campbell. We love a good Dan Campbell quote in the show. He's had plenty of memorable moments, and he just added another one at the podium. He gave us a gem talking about the roster that they put together in Detroit.
I think we're fortunate because I do believe we have some talented players on this team that have plenty of grit. That's a good thing, you know? Look, I think there was a number, I've said this when I walked in, there was a number of guys that were here. And I think Patricia and Quinn did a great job of, there's no turds here. There's no bad guys. Like, these guys work now. You know, we don't have guys, I'm lazy, blah, blah. We don't really have those guys. And that's a good thing. That's not always the case when you walk in and hasn't been a successful program.
Oh, calling out Patricia there?
I got to be honest
with you. Sounds like a call out.
Kind of like that.
Listen, there's nothing I enjoy more at this point than Dan Campbell press conferences. It actually is actually become very fun. Look, the grit thing, like, look, I am not a rah-rah person. Like, it's really fun when you're winning.
But he does make a point here.
He does. He does. They have some raw talent. They have good guys.
They have hardworking guys.
They have hardworking guys.
No apathy. No Ben Simmons. Oh, yeah. I'm not going to return your calls. Hit a free throw.
Well, look, when you're establishing a culture at a losing organization, I believe the first thing is to get everybody to buy into what you're selling. And if they're buying into it, that's the first thing. Now, you got to have the talent, and you've got to actually have some ideas that work on the field. But if everyone's buying into this, and it didn't really seem like they were with Matt Patricia, then it's a good start. Be excited about it.
Okay.
Great.
I'm cynical, but that I like that quote.
I too am cynical, but I'm with you. I actually think it's kind of, I don't think he means to call out Matt Patricia.
Okay, Dan Campbell
either,
went from,
because he's basically saying we have the right type of guys here. You guys just weren't able to put it together.
So we know the best guy in the league at the podium is Mike Tomlin. Not
yes.
even close. He's one. He's
yes.
the best ever.
Yes.
Literally, they're written down 8-second sound bites with intensity.
Mm-hmm.
He's never said They're all quotable.
Oh, he speaks with great intention.
So Mike Tomlin's the best podium guy ever. Gruden is very good. I mean, almost like he's acting on television. So
yeah.
He's good sec. So those are the two best. Dan Campbell just went from worst to second worst with that quote. Nick Sirianni is the worst.
And no, come on. Dan Campbell was better than Nick Sirianni.
Was he?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Dan, you know, he has his things and his turds and kneecaps and all that stuff. But he's like, you know, he's engaging. He's trying to deliver a message.
McVay is very good, too.
McVay is pretty good. McVay is good.
Sean always talk. I can't do a Sean McVay, but it's like this. Here's what I'm talking about right now. That's the way we do it. It's absolute. We don't do that. Everything's intense with Sean. The word intentional.
Intentional.
Sean is very intentional. This is what we do, okay? We don't practice there. There's no reason for it.
That's pretty good beats.
And he literally pauses so the writers can put a punctuation or a comma and then start their next sentence. He literally.
You have his cadence down.
He talks for the media. He's got it down perfectly. So we go Tomlin 1, Gruden 2, McVay 3.
Yeah, Shanahan's pretty good too.
He doesn't smile enough. And he wears a hat, so I can't always see his eyes.
Okay.
I got to be able to see. The worst Philly guy, Campbell. Matt Patricia was no day at the beach either, but he's
gone. Matt Patricia was not good. I don't know. I think that Dan Campbell does, like, look, we've picked on Dan Campbell's
thing. No more picking on him.
But I don't think he's a bad speaker. I think he's, you know.
I think he's turned a corner.
You like
he
it?
He moved from kneecaps to turds.
Grit.
So he made a big leap there. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line.
I'm going to do something fun. NFL season, there's some coaches on the hot seat. Coaches have to win. We'll lay that out next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Last year, 7 head coaches replaced in the NFL. This year, 7 will be replaced again in the NFL. I love emojis. It is time for the hot seat fire emoji game. Here we go, Joy.
How much heat is on Mike McCarthy's hot seat this season?
I would say 1 to 5, 3 fire emojis. 0-7 against winning teams. He's an offensive genius, and their offense was kind of a mess last year. And he also admitted at his opening press conference he lied to Jerry Jones and didn't actually watch all the Cowboys plays. It is Dallas. Jerry tends to be patient, but Jerry's getting older, increasingly less patient. They don't make the playoffs. I think he's in some trouble.
How about Matt Nagy's hot seat?
4 fire emojis. He was not given a contract extension. The season ended 3-7 last 10 games. Chicago is not going to tolerate that. It's a great sports city. He has a rocky September, early October. He's in trouble.
How about Zach Taylor's hot seat this season?
I would say only 2. The patience of the Brown family is pretty redeemable. They give coaches, you know, a lot of time. They don't. Bottom line is they don't want to pay for coaches they don't have. They can be a little cheap. The reality is his record's terrible, but he's likable. Burrow connects with him, and Burrow will have a lot of say in Zach Taylor's future. And Zach, what I've been told, is a very agreeable mentor. He's a really good guy for young quarterbacks.
How much heat is on Cliff Kingsbury's hot seat this
All
season?
All sorts of fire emojis. Let's go 4. Listen, he has 5 straight losing seasons. He couldn't win in college with Patrick Mahomes. He can't win in the NFL. Arizona's gone all in and given him some real star players. J.J. Watt, DeAndre Hopkins. If you're going to not make the playoffs, you better be 10-7 or 9-8 and showing progress. I think the GM and the head coach got to win this year.
How about Joe Judge?
1 fire emoji. I think they love him. I think they, last year, I felt like they were a rebuilding franchise, and they went 5-3 over their final 8. I thought they improved almost every week I saw them. I thought the losses were mostly Daniel Jones' inability to handle the ball. I think he works. He's tough. He's already had a couple of players quit in camp. He's a little old school, but he's been surprisingly good, in my opinion.
How much heat is on Vic Fangio's hot seat this season?
Inferno. 5. The flames coming out the house. Listen, Denver is gone. Denver's a great organization, and when's the last time they were good? And he's got a quarterback that he's going to roll with that I'm not a fan of. They were 0-7 against playoff teams last year. And the reality is, this is a division where he has easily the worst quarterback. Some of those losses could get ugly and embarrassing. He could be out by, and I'm not joking here, trading deadline week 8, 9, 10.
How about Mike Zimmer?
I'd give him 3 because they come off a bad season. He's a very intense guy who could wear on people. I think he's a great coach. I think he's a really good coach. And I thought last year the front office gave him, you know, Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson, he's got some star power. Their offense was fine. So I think Mike's great. I think he's one of the most underrated coaches in the NFL because if you don't win a bunch of playoff games, nobody likes you anymore. But I do think his intensity, that if they had another losing season, he could lose some guys because he'll tell you his opinion.
He also had a ton of injuries last year. Matt Rhule, how hot is his seat?
I would say 1, but I'll say 2 because the owner is a billionaire and not overly patient. So they didn't play particularly well. He's a really smart coach, and I don't see he's in a lot of trouble. But the Giants tend to be more patient with coaches. This hedge fund capitalist, he may just run him out of the building if things don't go right.
Pete Carroll.
1 fire emoji. 12-4 is the best record in 7 years. He largely runs the franchise. You know, John Snyder, the GM, almost left because he didn't have enough say. He's fine.
John Gruden.
Probably a weak 3 or a hot 2. What concerns me the most is they've gotten bad at the end of seasons. They also have a lot of replacements on the O-line. And if Derek Carr gets hurt or banged up early and you can't even get the offense right, little trouble. Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card into your first year automatically. Go to discover.com/yes. Good show today. Back tomorrow. Joey and Ryan for everybody. It's the Herd.